Blaine Hudson has the potential to turn out to be one of the better two-way defensemen in the league at some point in his career.
I think a good comparison is a guy like Evan Bouchard in Edmonton. Like, he's not really known for his defensive play. He's gotten better,
yeah,
but he's still known for, you know, his offensive game.
Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We are only 2 weeks away from season previews now. Each week, each episode, we're getting closer to NHL training camp and regular season. Fucking hang in there, man. It's tough.
It was so close to the end. We're like halfway through August. So September, teams are showing up for training camp. We'll probably start getting some news, maybe some contract talks.
We have a month left. It's August 16 at the moment. We are going to be Detroit's number one enemy today. If there are any Red Wings fans, I am so deeply sorry. We're about to go fucking in on you guys, mainly on Steve Yzerman, not the team, because Steve Yzerman has not done a great job in building this team outside of really like their top six, maybe a couple goalie prospects. And speaking of, Yzerman ended up having a phone call with Ken Holland of the Edmonton, right? Ken Holland?
No,
Bowman. Sorry,
Sam
excuse
Bowman,
me.
Yeah.
Sam Bowman of the Edmonton Oilers. And the Oilers acquired on both goalie prospects, Trey Augustine and Sebastian Cosa. The Red Wings were unwilling to talk about Augustine, but however, they listened on Cosa, and his price seems to be super, super high.
It should be.
Yeah, it probably will cost them a guy like Isaac Howard in a deal like that.
Yeah, I don't think that the Red Wings should even really entertain offers unless they're getting like an insane return back, mm-hmm. because, you know, I know they just traded for John Gibson, but, you know, he's getting close to his mid-30s. He only has 2 years left on his deal. You don't know how he'll fit there. You have this really, I think Kosas is still a great goaltending prospect. I think he can be a full-time starter, potential franchise goalie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't trade him unless you get an offer that completely blows you out of the water.
Yeah, I completely agree. And every team knows Edmonton is kind of desperate for a goaltender.
And I think Edmonton were willing to overpay for a goalie.
Yeah, and if I'm Edmonton, I'm willing to kind of overpay because, dude, I swear, they are legitimately a consistent goaltender away from winning the Stanley Cup.
I don't think the goaltending was the reason why they lost in the Stanley Cup
this year. It wasn't the reason why they lost, but I'm saying, like, if they had a guy like even just a John Gibson, for example, like we're looking at this team, like they could probably be the second favorite to win the cup behind Florida or maybe even be tied for it at this point. I just look at the Red Wings with Cosa and Augustine, and you shouldn't trade either of them unless you're potentially just fleecing the Oilers in that aspect and playing because they have all the leverage in any talks with the goaltender. They can go in and be like,
oh yeah,
we want Isaac Howard plus we want this and that just for Cosa. And it feels like they're higher on Augustine than Cosa, which deservedly so, because Augustine is a phenomenal goaltender. And this is a situation similarly to, I kind of compare it to Buffalo in a way where you have UPL and Devin Levi, but kind of a bigger age gap, whereas Augustine and Cosa, they're only a year or two apart, and they could really come up through the system together. And I'm assuming Cosa will be here before Augustine.
I think Cosa will probably be the starter in the AHL this year because they have John Gibson and Cam Talbot as their the tandem in the NHL, so that's a decent tandem. And yeah, you let Cosa just kind of develop more in the AHL.
Let Cosa develop, man. Like, he's one of the better goaltender prospects in the league for a reason. You don't need to rush him, especially because Yzerman, I thought, did a phenomenal job going out and getting job against him. He finally just addressed the need. And speaking of addressing needs, he addressed the need getting Travis Hanman and got him one.
I don't know what need that addressed unless they were trying to get older on the blue line from an already pretty old group. So when I look at kind of like the issues with the Detroit roster, the issues really, I think, stem from their defensive core. Like, obviously, in Mo Sider, you have a stud defensive player. He's paid like a top 15 defenseman. I think he is a top 15 defenseman. And then you have a young player in Simon Edvinson who's coming up, and I think he's going to be a great player for a long time, and I think a really good long-term partner for Moritz Sider. But then you look at the rest of their blue line, like, it's a bunch of guys, a lot of older guys. And Travis Hamnick, yeah, he's a good veteran player, but I don't think he really necessarily helps push that blue line forward.
No, he doesn't. You look at their roster, you have a bunch of sixth and seventh defensemen playing third defenseman, fourth defenseman, second pair minutes. And frankly, I think the Red Wings are one of the most top-heavy teams in the league, whether it's the forward group, whether it's
I completely agree. I think they rely on their first line very, very, very heavily.
They rely on their first line and their top two defensemen heavily, and I thought Edvinson was good for them last year.
Yeah, I think he's just going to keep getting better.
He's just going to keep getting better. And Sider, of course, is an absolute stud. And I think the only thing left for Yzerman now is to just fill out the blue line. And I know we've talked about this before, me specifically, where after this season, they have everybody with their contract expiring except Sider and Edvinson. But you know what? We're going to see fucking Yzerman come out and be like, here's a $2 by $4 million to half of these defensemen because just... I don't know. He can't trade for defensemen, apparently. He can't sign even decent defensemen because I look at this roster as a whole, and I felt like he did a okay job in bringing in players for the forward group and making a couple trades. I like the Mason Appleton trade. Signing.
Yeah. No, he's a good bottom six player. Yeah.
But you just look at their center depth, and like JT Comfort, he's a third line center, but he's probably going to be playing second line minutes for you. And just you have to fill out the depth, and you have to go out. And I think they're just a couple of defenders away from really being able to sneak into a wild card place in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not the biggest fan of their bottom six. They still have a lot of young players in the pipeline that are coming up.
Yeah.
Like Marco Kasper just completed his rookie year in the NHL. He had a solid year. You know, you have old man Patrick Kane still, who's actually been a pretty good fit in the Red Wings.
He's been phenomenal for them. Yeah. I remember when they signed him, he was like a point per game or something to start off his Red Wings career.
I mean, he gets a lot of power play points as well, but yeah. As he should. I mean, he's Patrick Kane. That's what he's kind of known for. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think another thing to look at this team is like also like, you know, we've talked about this a million times is, you know, it seems like when like a guy like Dylan Larkin are hurt, they kind of fall apart and they can't really score. And that shouldn't really happen. I remember a few years ago when they looked like they were a playoff team, mm-hmm. when Dylan Larkin misses a good amount of time, when he missed like a month.
He missed like 3 weeks, a month, something like that.
And the Red Wings completely collapsed.
And in the middle of that, they lost like 8 or 9 straight games or something. Just straight out regulation losses.
Killed their season.
Yeah, they were in a playoff spot when he got hurt.
Oh, they were like comfortably in a playoff spot. Yeah.
I remember that. They were like 10 or 12 points off.
Yeah, like they were a playoff team, like pending a disaster, and then the disaster happened.
And then they were fighting for their lives, and they just missed out. They actually lost a tiebreaker to Washington. If you get one more point out of that, you're in the playoffs by 1 point and 93 points.
Yeah. I mean, but that's inexcusable when one player goes down like that and your whole season collapse. And that tells me there's a lack of depth because you were like, because that first line with DeBrincat, Raymond, and Larkin, I think is top five first line in the league.
It is.
They are elite. You have a sniper in DeBrincat. You have one of the fastest players in the league in Larkin. He's a good playmaker. And then you have a guy in Lucas Raymond, who I think is a pretty complete first line center. He's a pretty complete first line player.
Mm-hmm.
And he can go in the corner, and he's not afraid to be physical. He's a good power guy. And you kind of combine that all, and you have one of the best first lines in the league, in my opinion. You know, he was 80 points this year, and he's just going to keep getting better. I think his contract's a good steal, too, at $8 million a year. But outside of that, like, okay, you have Patrick Kane, who's putting up good production in the second-line role. He can play in the first line in case someone's out.
Yeah.
Right? He has good chemistry with Alex DeBrincat back from the Chicago days. You know, but JT Comfort, is he a second-line center? Probably not. And then, you know, Michael Rasmussen is another depth guy that is kind of just a guy.
I want to go back to the Larkin stuff real quick about him missing time and stuff. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say it's, you know, you should be this team and not miss a beat when your captain and your one of your better players on the team goes out. That's not how it should be. But when situations like that happen, you have to find a way to fight and just keep your head above water. You don't have to fucking win like 5 straight games without him. If you do, great. You're like, you know what? We're even better, and it happens, right?
Well, because we got into an argument when this happened because you were saying like, oh, well, he's their best player, and it's like your whole team shouldn't collapse because one guy gets hurt.
Yes. Okay. Yes and no. I think that, okay, you shouldn't completely collapse and lose 8-9 straight games, whatever it is, and when you're 12 points into a playoff spot, because when you're 12 points into a playoff spot, most of them have the depth to hold up, right? You have, like, even your second line guys are stepping up, third line guys, whatever, and the goaltending, whatever. But when you have the top heaviness that the Red Wings have, when you have, like, five or six players that are absolutely phenomenal in this league, even a couple of them are borderline elite players, if not already elite, and then your captain goes out, your center, and then, I don't know, you should just play 500 puck, or even if, let's say he misses 10 games, right? They get like two wins, or like 2-7-2, for example. Like, that's better than what they did. Like,
oh, anything's better than what they did, even if they get a couple games to overtime.
Right, especially if you are that far into a playoff spot, just even if you only win two or three games out of those 10 games.
Like, it was like I said, I remember around that time, like, they were comfortably in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about them, like, they're going to make the playoffs. Like, okay, who that's it. We thought the East was pretty much set that year with the playoff teams. And, you know, Washington might be the worst team to ever make the playoffs that year. And then they get their ass kicked in the first round.
I think
Detroit would have put up a much better fight in the first round of the playoffs than that Capitals team did. But that to me just screams not great roster construction if a team completely collapses when you lose one guy like that. And I still think they have those issues. I think they're going to get better eventually. I think this year is going to be another year where you as a Red Wings fan, you're just going to be frustrated because, you know, you have the talent there. Mm-hmm. You can't deny that. You know, they have a great, great first line. Mo Sider and Evanson, I think, are going to be great. And they have some really good young players coming up through the pipeline. But I still don't think that blue line is good enough. Even with John Gibson there, like, you have a bunch of old guys that are slow, and that was your issue last year, was defense.
You are the Red Wings. You have playoff talent, playoff ready talent in the guys that we've mentioned a million times. You have a veteran goaltender that is a playoff caliber goaltender, mind you, but you have failed to even just go out and make trades and signings. And before, people probably already said shit in the comments, I don't give a fuck. But I get it's harder to make trades in the NHL and make these signings and convince players to come play for your city, especially when you're on a 9-year playoff drought, whatever it is, 8-9 years. But at the end of the day, you have no excuse. You have to go out. And I talked about this a couple episodes ago. At this point, I think Steve Yzerman is running out of excuses. I really, really think that.
I mean, I think the ownership and the leadership group there has been very patient with him. You know, because you look what he did at Tampa. That's what everyone brings up. It's like, yeah, okay, he wasn't the GM when they won the Cup, but look at the guys that he drafted and brought in that were like the nucleus of that team. Yeah, he did do that, but they also didn't win with him there. They got over the hump after he left, you know, but I think part of the issue is Yzerman is not very, I would say he's made two aggressive moves as a GM via trade his whole time in Detroit. One was when they traded for Alex DeBrincat, which I think that was a home run, great trade. And then when they moved up to get Sebastian Cosa.
Yeah.
And then that first round pick they traded to Dallas ended up being Wyatt Johnston. You know, but those kinds of trades is always like, okay, it is what it is. Like, who knows if Wyatt Johnston's the player he is if Detroit drafted him.
Right.
We'll never know.
And plus, at that time, too, the Red Wings were in desperate need of a goaltender prospect.
And if Cosa still ends up being a great NHL goaltender, it's still a good trade.
And plus, everybody knows, well, most sane people know, and NHL hardcore fans, that goaltenders take a longer time.
You have to be very patient with them. It's not very common nowadays. I can't even think of the last time this happened where like a goalie plays his draft like the year he got drafted. It hasn't happened in a long time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if Carey Price, he was a first round pick, and I don't even know if he played.
I think
right
the
away.
Last goaltender was, what did Fleury do it?
Yeah, he played his rookie year.
That might have been the last goaltender.
Yeah, he was the first overall pick in his draft.
Yeah. Just nuts.
It's kind of wild to think of a goalie going first overall.
That would never happen.
I mean, Fleury lived up to it.
He did.
Another goalie that was first overall is Rick DiPietro for the Islanders.
Yeah, bought him out in 2013. Still paying.
Dude couldn't stay. He was okay when he was healthy. He couldn't stay on the ice.
No, he couldn't. He couldn't. Couldn't skate. Couldn't do nothing.
But getting back to Detroit just for another quick second is I get you want to be patient. You know, you want to build things the right way. You want to be a perennial contender. You got to draft and develop and retain, right?
Yes.
That's what Tampa did. That's what led to their success. But then you look at a team like Vegas where they don't do that. How many guys on that team have they drafted?
None. They only have one draft pick, first round draft pick specifically, and they drafted him.
They still have
a
couple of guys from their expansion draft, which I guess you can kind of count as drafting.
I'm not counting that.
I didn't mean William Karlsson was kind of a developmental pick, and he turned into a stud.
Jay Theodore was too.
No, he was already good in Anaheim.
But he was like
20. He was young, but he was a top end prospect. Yeah, then still. But
he used to need.
And they got him for free.
You still need to develop him, though.
I don't know. They kind of got gifted him.
They did get gifted him. I'll give you that. But you know, maybe he doesn't turn out like that. And
but you have a team like that in Vegas where they're willing to take these gambles on trading, mm-hmm. making these huge splash trades, and sometimes it blows up in their face, like when they traded for Max Pacioretty from Montreal, and they ended up trading away Nick Suzuki. Now, do they make that trade in hindsight, knowing what Nick Suzuki ends up being? I still think they make that trade, honestly, because Suzuki was 19 or 20 at the time. He hadn't really played in the NHL, and Max Pacioretty was a star.
Yeah. You look at Florida, for example. They have four players on their team that are draft picks. They have a couple players off of waivers. The rest are people that they traded for. You know, the season where Jonathan Huberto had 110-plus points, they traded him away from Matthew Tkachuk.
I remember when that happened. Everyone was like, what are you doing? Like, Matthew Tkachuk's a great player, but like you just traded away a 100-point player and ended up being the right choice.
Sometimes you have to take risks in trades in order to get back something even greater.
Yeah, and I still think when he traded for DeBrincat, like he, I don't think he gave up a lot for that, and it was a pretty safe trade because you knew what DeBrincat was. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a great player in Chicago. He was a good player in Ottawa. He just didn't want to be in Ottawa. He wasn't a good fit there.
Yeah, he did not want to be there at all.
Yeah. And, you know, he comes into Detroit. He's where he wants to be. You get his buddy in Patrick Kane. He's happy there.
Yeah, he's happy. He's a phenomenal player. He's shifty, quick. He has a great shot. He fits perfectly in Detroit and can help the team get into the playoffs. I just think that they're just a missing couple pieces away from a player.
I agree. I think their blue line needs to continue to build. Like, the good thing is, like, with those three main guys that we're talking about that are kind of on the older side, like in Gustafson, Sherratt, and Justin Hull, man. Yeah. Everyone gets on him for that Justin Hull contract. And I don't blame him. It's not a great contract, but modified no trade clause, so it makes it even harder to trade him. Not that anyone would want him anyway.
Yeah.
They're all UFAs at the end of the year, so you kind of have a chance to reshape that blue line in that way. But you know, Detroit's running out. They have the second longest playoff drought in the league. The only team that has a longer playoff drought right now is the Buffalo Sabres. So at least they're not the Sabres.
Yeah,
but I think this goes on at least another year for the Red Wings. I mean, we'll see. I don't think they fire Yzerman even if they don't make the playoffs this year. I still think if they have a great season, I still think they could be a wild card team. Like, they have a good enough top end talent, I think, to kind of hide their issues. But if they make the playoffs, they're not winning. They might win a game.
Yeah, this team can, at their ceiling, get as a wild card 2 team.
Yeah.
But I think their floor is around 84, 85 points, especially with the top end talent. I don't think they get in this year. And I've talked about the Red Wings need to fire Yzerman, and I still stand true to that, but I think realistically, looking at all the blue liners becoming UFAs after this season, I think the Red Wings will give them another year to figure this shit out and get into the playoffs. And realistically, I think if they don't make it next season, if they miss this season, then he's a goner. That's just...
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not sure how much more patience you can have.
Right.
Just, and I'm not saying with the whole thing what I was talking about where him like not being aggressive enough. I'm not telling him to make a trade just for the sake of making a trade, but he doesn't like really taking those kinds of risks. He likes taking risk on draft picks, as we've seen, you know, because he's had some off the board picks where that some of that worked out great, like Mo Sider when they drafted him. I was like, what the hell? He could have been there later in the first round, and you know, he won Rookie of the Year, and everyone's like, okay, we got to trust Yzerman.
Yeah,
but then you have a guy in Filip Zadina who was a bit of a reach at the time, and he's a bust. He's not even in the NHL anymore. He's in Europe.
Yep.
So that's kind of the risk you can take sometimes with draft, especially with, I think Zadina was the fifth overall pick in the draft, and then the next pick was Quinn Hughes.
Yep. And Zadina was supposed to be a mid to late first round pick.
Yeah. Like he was a good prospect at the time, but a little bit of a reach, and he didn't ever end up really finding his way in the NHL. He tried to get another chance in San Jose, and he was okay there. But now
then
he
refused to play in Buffalo.
Did the Sabres sign him?
I think they wanted to do like a PTO or something. You just plain out said no.
Oh, I'm not sure. I think he's playing in Europe now.
What if they ended up going to trade for Mason McTavish? Because they've called on Mason McTavish.
I mean, that would change things. You have like a legitimate like second line player now, potential first line player.
Dude, if you got Mason McTavish and he could slot in right there as your second line center behind.
I don't think Steve Yzerman will really be willing to give up what he really would need to get a player like that.
You need to give up a lot. And what makes no sense about the Ducks with Mason McTavish is you are you want to sign him to a bridge deal, which, by the way, is very odd to me. Usually they want to get him locked up, but I don't know what's going on. Either way.
Mason McTavish has had like a pretty good development path where he just keeps getting better every year, yeah. And I don't see that really slowing down. I don't see what the issue is. He's an RFA, so I get there's not a rush to get a contract signed, but you have plenty of cap space going forward. You do have a bunch of older players, but they're older. You're not going to keep them around for a long time. Just pay your guy what you think he's worth, what he could develop into. The cap's going to keep going up. I don't see what the holdup is.
And they're asking for a shit ton from Mason McTavish if teams are calling. Well, that the teams are calling.
I mean, as they should. I think he's a great player, and I think he's going to get even better.
And I'll keep stressing this until the day I die. If you will not pay him like the top line player he is, do not trade him like the top line player.
What a lot of these teams do with these players in these kind of situations is, like, you see this all the time. Like, okay, they're not necessarily at their ceiling yet, mm-hmm. but we think in a couple years they're going to be, and if we wait, they're going to ask for way more money.
Yeah.
So let's just get the deal done now. Okay, we'll pay him, like, I think a good example is Yura Slavkovsky in Montreal. They're giving him $8 million a year. At the sign of the contract, you're like, I don't know about this, but he keeps getting better and better, and I think eventually he's going to be worth way more than $8 million a year.
And then we look at, in the same exact summer, you had Ottawa do with Jake Sanderson, and then Buffalo do with Owen Power.
Yeah, you bet. It is a bit of a gamble, because you know, if they end up like stagnating or maybe even getting worse, yeah, you're paying a guy a lot of money to not be what he needs to be, but you know, you kind of have to take that bet, because if the player ends up becoming what you think they can, it's a steal.
Yeah, it is. You if I'm the Ducks, I would have just given him the 7x7 he's asking for. That's not a bad contract for a guy like Mason McTavish, who in his first few seasons, he's just only gotten better, like you said, and he's only going to keep getting better. Mm-hmm. And his ceiling is a potential 80-point guy, I really think.
Yeah, so they have $20.5 million in cap space right now. I'm just looking at like their upcoming UFAs and who they'd have to pay. And I mean, Cutter Gauthier is an RFA next year, but I don't think he's going to break the bank. Leo Carlson is an RFA next year, another player. I could see them trying to give him like an 8x8 or like a long, soon it'll be a 7x8, because I think you can't sign a guy to an 8-year extension anymore next year.
After September 16th.
I think he's technically contract eligible now.
Cool. Carlson?
Yeah, he's on the last year of his rookie deal.
Yeah, he is extension eligible now.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't rush to get a contract signed with him. But and then Pavel Mintikoff, too, is an upcoming RFA. So they do have some guys that are going to, you know, ask for some money.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the cap's going to keep going up. The only guys you really have locked up long-term are Troy Terry.
Who is a very, very solid player for them.
$7 million a year. It's not bad at all.
I like that.
Yeah, and Lucas Dalsto, who they just gave it a nice extension to. And those are the only two really guys outside of the next 2 years that are really signed.
I'm telling you, man, listen, Pat Verbeek, if you're listening to this on your...
Oh, I'm sure he's listening, yeah.
Get these guys locked up long-term, man. Get Mason McTavish locked up, dude. If you decide to give him, let's say, a 3-year deal, right? And he balls out for you. Now you're giving him an extra $2 to $3 million.
I mean, but the team might be willing to make that bet and just like, okay, let's sign the other guys we want. Like, I think Leo Carlson is another player who's just going to keep getting better. And I think it would do the Ducks would be smart just to get him signed as long term as soon as they can.
I think that what the Ducks are going to do, they're going to bridge Mintukov, and I think they're going to try to bridge Carlson again. If he doesn't,
I think they'll bridge Cutter Gauthier. I would try to extend Carlson as long as I can.
I agree. I would try to get Carlson locked up to whatever the max is when you,
I'm fine with bridging Mintukov and Gauthier, but Leo Carlson, I think, is going to be a stud.
Carlson's going to be. He is such a big body center. When they drafted him over Fantilli a couple years ago, everybody was like, what are you doing?
But I still think that, I mean, they're both going to be great players.
They are.
Yeah.
And they're always going to be compared to each other. But at the end of the day, they're
different players, though.
Yeah. Carlson is a power forward. He's a grinder. He's a guy who can drive the net and make plays. And Fantilli's kind of more the guy who can make plays. He can play make. He can put the
shooter,
puck. Yeah, 30 goals last season. First guy from the 2022 draft class to hit the 30-goal mark, by the way. But a couple other teams that are calling on Mason McTavish are the Carolina Hurricanes and the Montreal Canadiens.
Montreal, geez.
I know.
How can they afford all this?
Do they have negative cap space right now?
Well, they haven't
right?
put Carey Price on LTIR. Okay, yet. That makes sense. So that will free up $10 million. But still, I mean, they're, I mean, I don't think they're re-signing Patrick Laine.
I don't think they will.
I think they'll keep him on the team this year because he's a good, you know, depth scoring piece to have. But he's getting 8.7 right now, and I don't think they'll keep him around.
No.
Unless he's willing to take a discount, and he won't.
He's not going to take one, especially if he
puts he's kind of got back to normal in Montreal. I mean, yeah. They're paying Nick Suzuki's a steal at 7.8, so yep. It's Cole Caulfield. So Klossy, sorry, he's only 7.6. I think that's a great contract. But then yep. you sign Noah Dobson to 9.5, and then you had a big contract coming up in Lane Hudson. I get the caps going up, but you're paying these young guys a lot of money, and Mason McTavish would just be another young guy you'd have to pay a lot of money to. I think it would be awesome if they can get him.
I think Montreal, they were a team just calling to see what the price is and potentially, you know, try to get something to work out. I don't think it's realistic that they can because of the cap situation that they're in, because you're going to have to pay Lane Hudson probably $11 million plus.
I think his contract's going to be really interesting. I think they really want to see him take the next step defensively this year. They know what he can do offensively. Mm-hmm. I want to see him more develop an all-around game.
Even if his points drop off just a little bit from like the 60 plus.
Defensive numbers improve, he's worth the money.
He is.
Yeah, because you know what he can do offensively. That's not going to go away.
But if he gives you 70 points and he's still sitting there making some defensive miscues, do you sit here and be like, is he worth the 11 because of his offense? Or you sit here and be like, let's give him $10.5 million? Like, you know,
I mean, but I would say I think a good comparison is a guy like Evan Bouchard in Edmonton. Uh-huh. Like, he's not really known for his defensive play. He's gotten better.
Yeah.
But he's still known for, you know, his offensive game.
Yeah.
And what are they giving him? $10 million a year?
$10.5 million, something like that.
And yeah, I mean, I think Lane Hudson will end up being better than him, honestly. I think he can develop like a more all-rounded defensive game because, you know, we saw what he could do as a rookie.
Yeah.
But you know, a guy like Evan Bouchard, I think, is getting $10 million a year is a fair comparison to maybe what Lane Hudson might be asking for.
I think that's a great comparison. I think him and Noah Dobson are two guys mm-hmm. that you can really compare him to. Noah Dobson is better defensively than Evan Bouchard. But at the end of the day, though, like, Lane Hudson is comparable, like, in his style of game to those two guys who can drive offense. And we remember a couple of years ago where Noah Dobson he really burst on the scene offensively and his defense wasn't there. And what happened last year when he was on the ice, his defense improved drastically, but his points dropped off a little bit. And I think the Montreal Canadiens, especially with how much young talent they have up in the top six, and their blue line, by the way, is super young, besides Lane Hudson as well. They have a bunch of young talent, but Lane Hudson doesn't need to give you 70 points a season in order to make a big impact on his team. Now, have I seen some comparisons of him to Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes? Yes. So I think that's realistic now? No, because he's only 20, 21, 22 years old, and he has a ton of room to grow. And I think Lane Hudson has the potential to turn out to be one of the better two-way defensemen in the league at some point in his career. But right now, that shouldn't be the focus. It should be developing his game and understanding that there's more to be on the blue line besides just his offensive prowess. And you don't want to tell him to not do anything offensively, not to keep taking the chances offensively. And you want to let him do his thing. But at the end of the day, you have to understand that if you want to be the best defenseman in the league, honestly, you're going to have to not only give 60 points a season, but also be elite defensively. And I think he has it in him.
Let me be honest with you. I don't think Lane Hudson will ever be the best defenseman in the league.
Wait, as long as Cale Makar is.
I don't know if he'll ever be top five.
Really?
I'd say there's, I think Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar are going to be the top two for a long time.
For like the next 5-7 years.
I mean, you got Rasmus Dahlin, who's mm-hmm. going to be a stud for a long time. I think Jake Sanderson has the potential to be a top five defenseman. Miro Heiskanen as well. Like, there's a lot of younger guys.
Adam Fox
as well. Mm-hmm. Could Hudson, I think, needs really round out his defensive play because you got in Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes. I don't think it's fair to compare those two to really anybody.
Yeah,
but those are two fully complete defensemen. They can do anything you ask them
those
to.
Those are like,
Cale Makar came in and he was a complete defenseman, yep. And Quinn was a really offensive guy, but he rounded out his defensive game and became a complete defenseman.
I think it's more fair to compare him to Quinn than Cale.
I agree. I mean, Cale Makar, I think, is already a Hall of Fame defenseman. I was going to say that.
I agree.
I know I like to like hype him up all the time, but he's really that good.
But he won a Conn Smythe not even his rookie year. He came into that postseason run straight out of college, mind you.
I don't think so.
Was that his rookie year?
No, I think it was his second year.
Was it really his second year?
Let me pull up his stats.
I thought he was drafted in 21.
He was drafted in like 2019. 2017, sorry, yeah.
Jesus, let me get with the program. Played,
it was just like his like third year in the league.
Jesus, fuck.
I think he won the Norris that year as well.
He has three Norrises or two Norrises for his name?
I think, he won a second one this year.
He has a Stanley Cup. He already has a Hall of Fame resume.
Yeah, no, he's
30 goal season.
Like I said, I think he's the best defenseman in the league right now.
I'll still argue that till the day I die.
Quinn Hughes is great. Quinn Hughes is great. But I think Cale Makar is just better at everything.
I know you're not going to want to hear the analytical bullshit. So
I know I don't.
No, you don't.
Just I like to watch them two play. And they're, like I said, they're both elite.
Yeah.
Top two defensemen in the league. Not even a question. I think there's a gap between those two and everybody else.
I think there's a massive gap between those two and everybody else. Genuinely.
But I think Cale Makar is just a complete player as you can possibly ask for.
He is, except analytically, Quinn Hughes' defense is better.
Can Lane Hutson develop into that? I don't know. I don't think it's fair to compare.
No, it's not.
I think people have really high expectations on him right now because of the rookie year that he had. You know, and I don't know if those are all justified because, you know, he was still a rookie. How many of those points are power play points? Like,
right.
Power play points like are still real points. Don't get me wrong, but I just want to kind of pump the brakes a little bit here for a minute before we like start comparing him to like the top end defenseman in the league. After 1 year in the NHL.
I think it's very unfair for him.
I do too.
Because you can't place these high expectations on a player 1 year into his NHL career. And if he has a down year offensively, but his defensive game gets dramatically better, people are going to be like, well, he didn't have a good year last year. No, he had a better year than last year. If he had 50 points, but he was better defensively.
Yeah, I think the last few years with the Norris really going, seeming like just shifting from, you know, the best all-around defenseman to which defenseman had the most points has kind of changed people's perspective on what a defenseman should be. Because I think the real culprit is probably like Erik Karlsson when he won the Norris a few years ago. Like, yeah, he had 100 points. His defensive numbers were horrible.
He was one of the worst defensive.
I mean, he was on the Sharks. They were really bad. So that doesn't do him any favors. But I get he had 100 points in his historical season. Yeah. But like after that, I feel like it kind of shifted towards like, which defenseman had the most points at the end of the year?
Because we've looked at the Norris before, like, let's say in the 2000s, right? The early 2000s, mid-2000s, whatever.
Well, I mean, it was the Nick Lischner award.
Right, it was.
And he was the best defenseman in the league.
And he wasn't putting up the most points as a defenseman in the league. No. He was just the best defenseman in the league. And even in the 2010s, we saw guys that were the best defenseman in the league, not the best offensive defenseman in the league. And I remember Karlsson really broke the narrative of going from just the best overall defenseman to now just the
most points. Cale Makar won it the year before.
Yeah.
And I think he led the league in points as a defenseman, but he was also the best all-around defenseman.
He was.
Because the analytics back it up.
Yeah. And I remember there was a year where did Yossi win it in 22?
I think he won it in 21.
He won it in 21. Karlsson won it in 22?
Something like that.
And Yossi still had like 80 or 90 points or something like that too. So the 2020s has really shifted from just to the offensive defenseman. I'm going back to Leighton Hutson. He had 26 power play points out of his 66 points.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he's a great play driver. I think them bringing in Noah Dobson really does help take some of the pressure off of him.
Yeah.
So like, okay, we have another guy in Noah Dobson who can drive play and, you know, get a lot of points as well. And that kind of goes like, okay, Lane, you can like kind of focus on developing your all-around game still. Because he's going into a second year still.
Yeah.
It's not like we're like putting he's going to be a Norris finalist next year. It's like, why are we doing this?
There's probably 10 defensemen that could realistically go and have a phenomenal defensive season.
I mean, every year I'm penciling in Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes as Norris finalists until one of them shit the bed and have a horrible season. But
there's going to be that third guy that I'll give you a list of guys who I think can win the Norris real quick. Adam Fox, Dahlin, Werenski, Heiskanen, and maybe that's it. Because I think Slavin's great. I don't know if he doesn't really get the recognition from the around the league.
They get like 60 points.
Yeah. I think Josh Morrissey has a potential. I think Bouchard does.
His defense isn't good enough.
Oh, that's fine. I don't like that. I know I don't either.
At least with like Quinn and Kale, like they are good defensively, so yeah. You can kind of defend that. But I mean, Dahlin, I think, has rounded out his game more. And Heiskanen's biggest issue is like his health a little bit the last couple years. And same with Adam Fox didn't have a good year last year.
He had a phenomenal year analytically. He was one of the best defensemen in the league.
But his points went down.
That's fine.
So that means no awards.
And I'm afraid that's going to happen with Lane if his defense gets better, but his points drop a little bit.
I think right now everyone has a lot of high expectations for Montreal because they were very aggressive in the offseason. They have a great young talent pool. They have still have a lot of great prospects in the pipeline. You know, we even talked about a guy like Demidov yet, who's has like they're thinking he could win Rookie of the Year next year. I think he's the betting favorite right now to be Rookie of the Year next year.
I think he should be.
So, like, this team has a lot of expectations on them, but they still, like, I know they were ahead of schedule last year and made the playoffs when they probably were a year or two away, but I still, this team still has some issues they need to clean up, especially defensively.
They're so young.
And if they traded for a guy, like, getting back to the whole Mason McTavish, if they traded Mason McTavish, like, that'll be a lot of fun to watch, but, like, Jesus Christ, like, Mountain Bowl's going to have to stand on his head every night.
Plus, how are you going to afford all of this in 2 years?
I mean, the cap's going to go up.
I know.
But still, like, you have the if they trade in McTavish, trade for McTavish, I'm assuming they get him on a long-term extension right away.
Yes.
And then, so you have your core, like, locked up. But then, like, what if Cole Eiserman comes in and he's a stud? Like, can you afford to pay him on a long-term?
Cole Eiserman?
No, I'm not Eiserman. The different other defensemen.
Oh, wait, a prospect?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not Eiserman. He's on the Sharks.
Oh, like, I'm on the Canadiens right now. I don't see it.
David Reinbacher.
Okay, yeah, I totally forgot about him.
Yeah, because he was probably going to play last year, and he got hurt.
He fucked his knee up in the preseason.
He played 10 AHL games last year. That was probably at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does he could probably fight for a roster spot this year, but, you know, what if he comes in and he's, like, a stud, too, and how many of these guys are you going to afford to pay?
And you know what? I think he has a spot opening up for him in the 26-27 season. Mike Matheson's a UFA, but also Mike Matheson is an integral part into some of that veteran leadership group in the locker room. So well, you bring him back on a cheaper deal?
Captain, and he's the oldest guy on that blue line by far.
Right. So it's just, it becomes a situation where even, like, all on their blind. Like, you have Dobson, you have Cooley, you have Jaden Struble, like Lane Hudson, and now you have David Reinbacher. That's five out of your six defensemen that are all under the age of, what, 24? Yeah, all under the age of 24. No, sorry, Dobson's 25.
I kind of want to brainstorm for a minute, kind of put maybe together a somewhat realistic trade package that Montreal could offer to Anaheim to even consider trading McTavish. So they could start with a first-round pick, obviously. Yep. I would probably throw in a guy like Kirby Doc.
You read my mind. Yep.
You know, Doc is a great what if story too, because he just can't stay on the ice.
No, he can't.
He was the third overall pick in his draft. He comes in Montreal and he got
hurt, and then he came back from injury. He was actually balling out, and then he got hurt right away.
I mean, he had 57 games last year. He didn't play any playoff games. The year before, he played 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his most played games was 70 his last year in Chicago, and then after that he hasn't played a season over 60 games.
Yep.
Didn't he tear his ACL a couple years ago?
Yep.
Yeah. So I would probably trade to get him back like a guy like Kirby Doc, who I think still has potential. He just needs to stay in the ice. I don't think they trade Laine this year, because I still think, like, if they need him just for secondary scoring, let just let him walk in free agency, or if you're not where you want to be at the deadline, trade him.
Yeah.
I'm
trying to think. We did Doc a first round pick, and do you give them a guy like, no, they don't need a Jaden Struble, because they're already loaded. Anaheim's already loaded with defensive prospects or young defensive players. Sorry. I would go with Doc first, and either you throw in Anderson or like a third round pick or something. I don't know if that could potentially get the job done.
I mean, though, Anderson would kind of be like a cap dump. I think them getting rid of Anderson's contract would be doing him a favor.
It would.
Because he's kind of like, I mean, that contract wasn't great when they signed it.
Now he has 2 more years left at 5.5.
I mean, it's not a killer, but
no, it's not.
Montreal will be happy. But I think trade talks start with at least a first and probably Kirby Doc plus more.
Yes, I agree with that. All right, quick time out before we get back to the action. This episode is brought to you by Dubby Energy. Listen, hockey's fast, and whether you're breaking down plays, yelling shoot from the couch, or just getting in a workout, you've got to stay sharp. That's where Dubby comes in. Clean energy with zero sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or dyes. Just 150 milligrams of caffeine per serving, about 2 cups of coffee's worth to keep you locked in and ready to go. Personally, I use Dubby before the gym, on the ice, and even when prepping content for the pod. If you need that extra spark, whether you're grinding through work, lifting, or lacing up the skates, Dubby's got you covered. Head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. That's Dubby.gg, code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. Fuel up. Stay locked in, and let's get back to the episode. Let's hop into our Olympic roster prediction. I know we were going to talk about, let's just go over it, and we totally fucking forgot. Either way, though, if you want to change shit around, by all means, fucking do it. So we're going to start with Canada and then go over to the U.S. There are already 6 players named that are already on the roster right now. For Canada, it's Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Connor McDavid, Braden Point, Sam Reinhart, and Cale Makar. Of course, the 6 that you all would expect. Who I have in terms of forwards wise, I have Crosby, Brandon Hagel, Nathan MacKinnon, Brad Marchand, Mitch Marner, McDavid, Point, Reinhardt, Mark Scheifele, Mark Stone, Robert Thomas, Nick Suzuki, John Tavares, and Sam Bennett. Defensively, I have Evan Bouchard, Drew Doughty, Makar, Thomas Harley, Devon Toews, Shea Theodore, Aaron Ekblad, and Josh Morrissey. And goalies, I have Aiden Hill, Sam Montembeau, and Jordan Binnington.
Yeah. Who do you have as the extras?
I have Tavares as an extra and probably Suzuki.
I mean, a lot of those guys are like, I know they've only named 6 guys, and like those are the most obvious guys in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know like Mitch Marner will definitely be on Team Canada. Mm-hmm. I think Sam Bennett definitely will. Hagel will. Marchand definitely will. Yeah, Devon Toews definitely will. I mean, just have like continuity too with Makar and Toews, like, because they're a pair and one of the best pairs in the league in Colorado already. Yeah. So to have that on the Olympic roster. Was Aaron Ekblad included on the... No, he was... Was he suspended or was he hurt during the Four Nations face-off? I don't think he played.
I don't think he played either, but he had a 20-game suspension. I think it happened after. He might have been hurt. I'm going to check his game log.
You know what? I think he was hurt because I think he was hurt anyway, and then he got suspended. And then we're like, okay, well, you just have more time to get healthy now.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, Jordan Binnington, I think, has earned, you know, the starting job after his performance in the Four Nations.
Yeah, yes.
I still think goaltending is a question mark for Team Canada. I know Binnington was great last year for them and arguably won them the game and the championship game, but yeah, I don't know. The Olympics is a little different. It's a lot longer. You have to have more sustained high level. I know Binnington's he shows up at big games, and I think the talent on the blue line and especially their top 6 is good enough just to kind of carry them.
Yeah.
I mean, they should like stop most lesser teams.
I mean, I don't think he was hurt. No, he played February 8th. There was a break, and then he played February 22nd.
So he just wasn't selected.
He must have not been selected. I think you select him for the Olympics, though. I think you have to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if Drew Doughty is on the team. Maybe if you just want a veteran.
Well, that's what it is. I think he's going to be on the team strictly for that 7th or 8th defenseman, whatever it is. I don't know how much playing time he'll get. I mean,
Thomas Harley came in last year for Canada, the Four Nations, and really impressed people.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, did he only play the...
He only played 2 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Makar was, I think, sick the one game, and then somebody got hurt for the gold medal. It was Morrissey got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's pretty much no doubt about Team Canada, genuinely, in terms of...
Yeah, I think there's like a couple question marks with some of the younger players. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people want Connor Bedard on Team Canada, but I don't think he's earned that yet.
No, he hasn't. All these guys on the
list. As cool as it would be to see like Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid and Connor Bedard on the same team, I think Bedard's too raw right now still.
And even if he did get the call to the Olympics, I think he's just a healthy scratch. He's there to replace. And if there is I'm assuming there will be something where if you have enough injuries or sicknesses to get a player.
I think they're allowed to playing a good number of backups because... Mm-hmm. It's the break, too, and it's in Italy this year, so it's not exactly easy to get a guy called up right away.
It's not like you can just send somebody on a plane overnight.
Yeah, it's not like it was in Boston or Montreal like it was this year, where the guys are kind of in at least in that continent.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's like, oh, we have a game tomorrow. We got to fly a guy overseas.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of these guys are being on a vacation during the break.
And then when you get there, you're like, you don't want to play because you're tired. Your body is beat.
Yeah, so they're going to bring a good amount of extras.
They will.
Probably like 3 or 4 like spare players.
I still don't know if Connor Bedard is one of those extras.
I don't think so either.
Let's hop over to the American side with the six players that were named to the roster already. Matthew Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk, Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews, and defensively, Quinn Hughes, Charlie McAvoy, the six that you would kind of expect. Yes. And then the rest of the forwards in the defensive group. Kyle Connor, Jason Robertson, Cole Caulfield, Jack Hughes, Dylan Larkin, Matt Boldy, Tage Thompson, Clayton Keller, Jake Ensel, JT Miller. Defense, Jacob Slavin, Zach Werenski, Adam Fox, Brock Faber, Jake Sanderson, and then Seth Jones. Goaltenders, Connor Hellebuck, Jake Ottinger, and Jeremy Swayman. And I really think that JT Miller is going to be one of the guys that is scratched. And then same with, honestly, probably Seth Jones is too.
I mean, I think the one part of this roster that's like definitely locked in is the goaltending. Mm-hmm. Like, they have the best goaltending in the tournament. I think it won't even be close.
I think by far.
Well, you have Connor Hellebuck, best goaltender in the world right now.
He will be the starter.
He will be the starter. And then Jake Ottinger is a really good backup. And then we'll see. I think Swayman might, there's a chance he might not be if he goes into this year and he's still not great in Boston.
If he has a horrible up to December 1st, I don't know.
Because I don't know when they have to have these rosters locked in.
It's sometime in December. I don't know.
Yeah, so they're going to have some time to kind of look at how players have been and kind of make decisions. I'm not sure who else. I don't know that many American goalies off the top of my head.
I'm going to check to see what other better options there are if Swayman has another save percentage sub 900.
Yeah, because, I mean, you could chalk some of that up to, like, Boston's not great defensively, but still, like, the money they're paying.
But his goals above expected was in the negatives.
Saves above expected?
Yeah, above expected, sorry. Can it search? There we go. Active American NHL goaltenders. I mean, there's guys like John Gibson, Thatcher Demko.
No. Demko, maybe, if he could stay on the damn ice.
Dustin Wolf.
No, he's too young.
I think your best option would be John Gibson if really...
I would say John Gibson or Thatcher Demko. Demko can like stay on the ice.
I would rather bring over Gibson strictly for the health. Now, granted he's going to be the third goalie, whichever... You know, three goalies that we're mentioning. But a couple years ago, we were talking about Thatcher Demko battling with Jeremy Swayman for a potential, you know, and Jake Ottinger. But
did we just completely forget about Hellebuck?
No, but Connor Hellebuck, okay, he's a guaranteed starter.
I'm surprised he wasn't one of the first six named.
I get it because he's a goaltender, but
like, I mean, everyone knows he's going to be on the team.
That is true.
He's the starter.
Yes, he will be the starter.
Back-to-back Vezina winner. He's the starter.
And it's not like this is some protected shit where, you know, it's fucking country. You get to literally pick who you want on your team. So it doesn't matter if you are like,
imagine if they don't pick him. It's like, well, he was kind of bad in the playoffs last year.
Shut the fuck up.
And the Olympics are pretty much just a big playoff, right?
Yeah, we saw how he did away from home against the Blues.
And it's like, if he was bad in St. Louis, he's going to be really bad in Italy.
Thatcher, getting the call up. Actually, you're gonna be our starter.
Hey, Thatcher, are you on vacation? He's like, oh yeah, I'm in the Bahamas right now. It's like, you want to get to Italy right now? He's like, huh? It's like, there's a flight that leaves in 2 hours. Can you get to the airport? It's like, no, I'm at the beach with my wife.
We need you to play tonight.
It's like, what do you mean tonight? Like, well, the time difference is like 5 hours, and the game starts in 7. So, and the flight's about. You know what? Never mind. I don't think we can get you there in time.
That's crazy. I think that the U.S. and Canada, I don't know if the same pools. I don't know if the pools got announced or not for the Olympics.
I don't know either.
I don't know. But either way, I expect these two teams to be the best, and we'll see how the rosters shape out. And
I think the thing with the Olympics too is like there's going to be some teams that catch you up guard. I think a team that has some potential to make some noise is Team Germany.
Yeah, they've definitely gotten better in terms of hockey over the last.
I mean, they have one of the best players in the world, Leon Draisaitl, Mo Sider, Lucas Raymond. No, he's Swedish.
Yeah,
right, swimmers, and JJ Paterka, like and three,
Timmy Stu.
Yes, I'm so like four great German players already. I think they're a team that could surprise some people.
I want to see who their attendee would be.
Germany? I don't know.
I know it's some like.
Is Dolstel German?
I don't think so.
He's a very German.
Philipp Grubauer would be the starter. Oh. He's the only active NHL goaltender that's
Where's
German.
Where's Dolstel from? He's from the Czech, so he'll be on the Czech
team. He will be.
Yes.
With David Pastrnak.
Yeah, because I think we forgot about, like, because of the Four Nations face-offs, because there's only those four countries. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other really good players in the world that weren't allowed to participate. Is Russia going to be allowed to be at the Olympics?
I think the athletes
can participate, yes, but not under the Russian flag.
Correct, yes.
So, I mean, Team Russia, or Olympic athletes from Russia will be really good. They might be a little bit on the older side.
I don't know. They have future Hart Trophy winner Kirill Kaprizov, so.
True. I mean, old man Ovi in the Olympics, battle out one more time with Sidney Crosby.
Andre Vasilevsky, Sergei Bobrovsky, Nikita Igor Shcherbakov. Dude, that team
who
might
starts?
Be... Bobrovsky, who's been a three straight.
I don't think Bobrovsky's the starter.
I think, honestly.
I think Igor.
Igor, or call me crazy, throw in Andre as a starter, throw Igor as two, and then Sergei.
That's not a bad. I think Russia probably has the best goalies. Like, they're the best goalie factory in the world right now.
They are. And when we talked about the best goaltending, we totally forgot about Russia. I think Russia has the better goalie out of the U.S.
Yeah, I think Connor Hellebuck is the best goalie in the world right now, he is. But he hasn't proven that he can handle a big stage.
That's true. All three of these goaltenders that are on Russia have.
Yes.
I know Igor hasn't been in the same extent as the other two on Russia, but he still has carried the Rangers.
Oh,
in
the playoffs. He's been the one guy that showed up for the
when
Rangers.
When they've lost in the playoffs, is because they couldn't score, not because of him.
Yeah, they were losing games like 2-1.
Because Connor Hellebuck, the Jets have lost playoff series because of him the last 4 years.
And they almost lost the first round because he couldn't make a fucking save in St. Louis.
Yes.
Which doesn't make any sense.
But in Winnipeg, though, he looked like his regular season self, which made no sense.
I mean, I think with Russia, their goaltending is going to take them really. I mean, they have a good blue line, too.
They do.
They're going to have a good team as well. I think Sweden and Finland will also be good. You know, Czech. Like, the Olympics are going to be a lot of fun. And I'm glad the time difference in Italy is not too bad. I think the last Olympics, when was the last Olympics with NHL players in? I think they were, was it like 2018?
I thought it was 2014.
Where were the Olympics in 2014?
Let's take a look.
Because I know, like, the 2010 Olympics were in Vancouver.
Yeah. It was in Sochi, that's right.
Yes.
So that was probably, what, maybe 6 hours?
6-7 hours.
Something like that. And
I remember I watched some of those games, I remember. I remember I watched that crazy game with Team USA and Russia, with TJ Sochi.
Yeah.
That game was crazy. There was another one I watched that was crazy with Latvia almost beat Team Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't remember that. That game was Canada was out shooting them. I think the shots at the end of the game were like 60 something to like 15. They won 2-1.
The fuck was Latvia's goalie?
I don't know. He never played an NHL game.
That's crazy.
I think he was like a Tampa Bay Lightning prospect at the time.
Okay.
I want to say his name started with a K. I don't know, but he was playing out of his freaking mind. And Latvia scored such a cheap goal. They were short. They were short on the penalty kill. And they had just killed the penalty. And they had the puck at the perfect time where, like, the guy had just gotten out of the box. And they hit him with, like, a free breakaway pass. And he Carey Price was like, oh, shit. He wasn't ready because Carey Price was starting goalie then. Okay. That Team Canada team was fucking stacked.
Team Canada, right, if you guys think it's stacked now, it was... definitely sacked
that. Yeah, that game was crazy, though. They almost lost a lot. It took Shea Weber like 100-mile-per-hour slap shot for them to win that game.
I'm trying to look at the box score now to figure out the goaltender and stuff and really to see how crazy it is, and it's just loading right now. Nothing.
Let me look up 2014 Latvia Olympic hockey team.
Okay, finally loaded.
They actually made the...
So 57 shots again. It was Christers Godlewski.
Yeah. So
55 saves on 57 shots.
Yeah, he played out of his mind.
That's crazy.
When he let in the goal, like the Canada won the game, and he was just laying on the ice like he just died.
Yeah, he probably lost fucking 15 pounds of water weight.
But
goddamn.
He played a couple NHL games.
Okay.
Never really stuck around. Now he's playing in the DEL.
I'm excited for the Olympics, dude. I really am. I think this is... we think that the Four Nations was good and people think Four Nations was good. tune into the Olympics, man. If you're a casual hockey fan or somebody that wants to get into hockey, please watch the Olympics come February, because they're going to be 10 times better than the Four Nations Faceoff, I think. A lot more talent's going to be showcased from around the NHL and around the world in general, not just from the NHL.
It's best on best. You just got a taste of it in the Four Nations Faceoff, because I'm really excited for the Olympics this year. I think I'm going to try to watch as many games as I can. It's just, how many times do you get all the best players in the world convening in one place for a week of the best hockey you've ever seen in your life?
The first time in 12 years we get NHL players in the Olympics.
I'm so glad they came back, and I'm like I said, I'm stoked. I hope they have the, I don't know when the next time the Olympics are scheduled to be in North America for like the Winter Olympics, but like, yeah, man, I'd love to go down there and just watch some games.
You know how expensive that would be?
Dude, when are you ever going to get to do that again?
That is true. Like, that's the
thing you got to keep in mind, was like how, when am I going to get to go to the Olympics again?
I don't think they have the 2030 Olympics yet, but I know there's some North American teams that are like trying.
They're having the 2028. The 2028 Summer Olympics are going to be in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I know they're trying to have a bid to have a Summer Olympics in Atlanta, I think in like 2032. I think they already announced the 2030 Olympics. And I think they also announced the 2028.
Well, I know 2023. No, I don't think they announced.
No, 2028's LA.
Yeah. Well, they have 2034 in Utah.
Winter Olympics?
Yeah, Olympics.com, Salt Lake City, Utah, 2034, Olympic Winter Games.
Has that been confirmed?
February 10th to 26th.
I'm going to look that up.
Let me actually click on the link.
Okay, yeah. So
organizing committee formed.
Oh no, it's confirmed. So yeah, 2026 is in Italy, 2028 summer in Los Angeles, 2030 in France. That's winter, 2032 summer in Australia, and then 2034 Salt Lake City winter. So try to go to Salt Lake City in 2034.
We are there. How's that going to work in Australia though? Because their winter is when our summer is. I know, but their winter is when our summer is.
Dude, Australia is hot.
That's true.
And I don't know, but yeah, they're having in Brisbane, Australia in 2032.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, because they're definitely not having the Summer Olympics in Salt Lake City.
No, clearly not. It's not hot enough.
The Winter Olympics in 2030, and they're having in the Alps. That would be cool for like skiing and stuff.
That will be sick.
Beautiful.
Up in the mountains type shit.
We're excited about the Olympics. TLDR.
Let's hop into my top 10 goalie list. Originally, it was supposed to be last week, and then we had shit happen with the audio, so
I have a feeling this is going to be much less controversial than your other list.
It will be. Honorable mentions, UC Saros, Dustin Wolf, and Philip Gustafson. Number 10, Jacob Markstrom. Number 9, Jordan Binnington. Number 8, Logan Thompson. Number 7, Jake Oettinger. Number 6, Linus Allmark. Number 5, Ilya Sorokin. Number 4, Sergei Bobrovsky. Number 3, Andrei Vasilevsky. Number 2, Igor Shesterkin. And number 1, Connor Hellebuck. Shoot.
So let me ask, is this based on like this past season? Or just overall?
It's just based on overall, like heading into the season. I'm not basing it straight off of last season, because otherwise I'd have Kemper in here. And I think Kemper is a great goalie, but I think he's due.
Well, I just want to ask with Logan Thompson at 8, because he's had one good year.
I think he can keep it up this year.
I think he can too, but I think, you know, putting him above, like, because if we're basing it off this season too, like, okay, UC Saros wasn't a top 10 goalie in the league this year.
Darcy Kemper's a top 5 goaltender in the league.
But I would just say, like, based on the last few years, like, yeah, I would say UC Saros is a top 10 goalie in the league.
Yeah, based on the top 10. But I think heading into the season, he's not. I think all these goaltenders are better than UC Saros.
So you're kind of basing it off mostly off of last season.
Last season and heading into the season, who I think will
get to. That's what I don't understand. Okay. I mean, I think UC Saros can bounce back, but I mean, that Nashville blue line, it ain't good.
No, it doesn't help him out at all.
And yeah, Nashville's kind of stuck. They're going to be, I think they're going to be bad again next year.
Tear it down, for real.
They can't tear it down, though. They gave everybody a big payday.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dustin Wolf, I think he can make himself a top 10 goalie this year.
I had him in the side of the top 10 for pretty much the entire week. And then like last second, I was like, yeah, I'll take him out.
Yeah, Philip Gustafson's a goalie I'm really interested to see. Can he continue? Because this is like his first year where he really had like that sustainability. Because he had stretches where he looked really good, and then he shit the bed for like another few weeks.
Yeah.
Like, this was, yeah, really the first year where he, like, showed, like, yeah, I could be a full-time starter in this league.
Yep.
I mean, Connor Hellebuyck, he's number one until someone else wins the Vezina Trophy.
Yes.
Like, I don't think that's uncontroversial at all.
It's not.
This is just regular season as well, right?
Correct. I'm not basing it straight off of postseason two.
Yeah, I think Igor, he is the New York Rangers right now.
Yeah.
I think without him, they're a lottery team.
I don't hate that take at all.
Vasilevsky, he had another bounce back year. Yeah, I mean, I really don't have many issues with this. I would the just probably, thing... I think Logan Thompson at eight's a little high. I think that's more recency bias, but.
Probably is.
Yeah.
The one thing that I kind of was iffy on, I know it sounds crazy, putting Sergei Bobrovsky four, he didn't have the greatest numbers last season.
I mean, yeah, but he shows up when you need him to.
That's true. In the big games, he does show up. I mean, I was honestly thinking about possibly putting Sorokin at four. I think Sorokin's so underrated now. I know the last few
years. He's a big reason why the Islanders are competitive.
Yeah. And I think in going to Linus Allmark and Jake Oettinger, those are two very similar goaltenders in my
mind. Like, when I look at, like, the top five goalies in the league, like, these are goalies that will, like, win you a game.
Yes.
Like, you can have, like, your offense could have a horrible night where, like, they need, like, a lucky bounce or something to get it in the net. And you ask these goalies, like, look, we're playing a team that's way better than us. We need you to hold down the fort, and they can do it. And I think those top five goalies are the five goalies in the league that can do that. I think
my top seven can all do that. We've seen Jake Oettinger and Linus Allmark do it,
too. I don't trust as much in a big game.
But he did it against Colorado.
Yeah, but he didn't do it against Edmonton at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I just need to see more consistency out of Oettinger. And then Allmark, he's kind of... I don't think he's played enough playoff games to determine of, like, okay, like, he can, like, just win us a game. Like, it was that year in Boston, he was injured.
He should not have been playing.
And then Ottawa, I thought he was fine. He wasn't the reason why Ottawa lost.
No, but that was just lack of playoff experience, honestly. Yes,
I think that was the biggest thing. I think he actually helped stabilize them a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think next year Ottawa, like, if they make the playoffs, I think they'll look much better.
Though they could potentially just win a playoff run at least.
Maybe.
Depending
on who they play. But
like, if they go and play Florida, they're not winning that.
I don't know if anyone could beat Florida.
Or Toronto. Well, not what you just said about anybody beating Toronto, but if Ottawa played Toronto, I don't know if they get past Toronto.
That'd be a tough series. They played them tough in the first round this year, but I don't think anyone's beating Florida until... I don't believe anyone's going to beat Florida until they actually do it.
I'm with you with that. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, head over down to the description and go follow us on all of our social media platforms. Subscribe, notification bell as well. New episodes are every single Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for the rest of the offseason. And we'll see you guys in our next episode.